You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. This light we kindle is set in the lamp of our history. We inherit this free faith from the brave and gentle, fierce and outspoken hearts and minds that have come before us. Let us be worthy inheritors of this faith, and through our good works, pass it boldly to new generations. Good morning to you all, and welcome to this service of worship. It is called a service because it is meant to serve you, and it's worship because we raise to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you on behalf of the generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. This is a radically inclusive spiritual community. We welcome everyone. It doesn't matter what God or gods you believe in or don't or aren't sure of. It doesn't matter how you gender identify. It doesn't matter what political leanings or affiliations you have, and it doesn't matter who you prefer to love or make love with. No matter who you are, you will find this a community that supports you as you find and fashion and follow your own spiritual path. Whatever path helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all people. Please do join us after this service for coffee, tea, and conversation. In the meantime, would you join us in singing Blessed Spirit of My Life? Please stand as you're able.
Roadblocks to success is the fear of failure. Fear of failure is worse than failure itself because it condemns you to a life of unrealized potential. A successful response to failure is all in your approach. Success in the face of failure comes from focusing on results, what you hope to achieve, rather than trying not to fail. While it's tempting to try and avoid failure, people who do this fail far more often than those who optimistically focus on their goals.
I immigrated to Australia 20 years ago this year, after having lived 14 years in and around the big city of London. The sudden shift from living in London to living in Adelaide kind of went to my head a little bit. So much elbow room, so much light and fresh air, such boundless plains to share. So naturally, I bought a farm in the Adelaide Hills out near Wistow. Now, I had never owned any land or done anything remotely like agricultural work before. In my boundless self-confidence, I remember thinking something like, "Nah, how hard could it be? Farmers do it." Fortunately for me, YouTube was in its infancy then, or there would for all time be hours of comedic footage of the Yank down under, featuring snippets like me breaking my tractor on a fence post, me getting kicked in the groin by a recalcitrant sheep that didn't seem to want to be castrated, me after a day's revegetation planting limping back to the house like an orangutan with a bad back, me executing a perfect but totally involuntary somersault from my mustering horse after it stepped at full gallop into a rabbit hole. I was not permanently injured by any of this, not physically, anyway. There are countless more examples I could amuse you with, but you get the picture, Abufa. Like this. It's all those stories are going to be grist for my soon-to-be-released self-published memoir, A Yank Down Under, Less Fun Than That Sounds, which might help me offset some of the cost of that steep learning curve. Suffice it to say, my farming was a litany of failures. That's the view of the property from the front porch. A litany of failures. Let us say that those years on that farm taught me a lot about overconfidence, the necessity of failure, what success really looks like, and of course, things like humility and what you can rightly take pride in. The aim of this project was to produce low-maintenance, woolless, grass-fed meat sheep. It was about 100 acres, with water, decent fencing, and a stockyard, but most of the soil was impoverished. It was weedy or rocky from a century and a half of exploitation and abuse, from settlers clearing it, thank you colonialism, and then overgrazing, thank you capitalism, and then a generation or so of management by amateurs like me. Thank you, other privileged fools trying to prove something to themselves there. So soil condition was the urgent problem. No good soil, no nutritious grass, no fat sheep, and busto goes the whole project. But you can't make the shots you don't take, right? So, undaunted, I did some research, I talked to the council's land management advisors, and over the first couple of years, I worked to enrich that soil. I bought a tractor to spread fertilizer and spray weeds. But the most costly and seemingly futile part of the project was that I sowed, lavishly and expensively, native grass seed to crowd out the introduced varieties of grass that abounded in the paddocks. Nothing I did cost as much in time and effort and money as that seeding. Now, all seed, of course, is precious, but native grass, especially so. It's relatively rare, it's hard to harvest, and it is delicious to vermin when it's stored. Yet each and every single native grass seed had within it the potential to produce multitudes like it, exponentially, generation after generation. Abundant native grass was going to be absolutely necessary if this land was to support the flock and the flock was to flourish. Seed and soil. You need both to be in relationship to each other. Now, there was some good soil. My guess was that about 25% of the land was pretty rich. Now, in my naivety, I thought this was my problem. Should I only sow the precious seed on the good soil? Or wasn't it more needed on the poorer soil? I couldn't decide, so despite the cost, I sowed all over the place. Rich soil, poor soil, weedy soil, rocky soil. If this sowing of seed is sounding familiar to any of you with a Christian background, bear in mind it's not every day I offer you a gospel passage, but listen to this from Matthew 13. A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and withered because they had no roots. Other seed fell among weeds and thorns, which grew up and choked the crop. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop that was 100 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear. And his disciples came to him and asked, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" Why indeed speak in parables? Jesus could just have cut to the chase and said, "Look, you want to know how the Spirit shows up in the actual world? 75% of what the Spirit of life offers fails. That's the path, the rocky soil, the weedy soil. But the 25% that finds the good soil, that 25% is enough for abundant living. None of the offered seeds will thrive without a relationship to some receptive soil, and there's only ever 25% of that. It is my opinion that most folks' atheism amounts to an unreasonable demand for a God who offers perfection in all outcomes. But the Spirit's perfection is not in a 100% success rate, but in its persistent and abundant generosity, despite the rate of failure. Omnipotence doesn't mean perfection. The all-potency of the Spirit is in that generosity, in an apparent acceptance of quite a lot of failure in order for life to thrive. Whoever has ears, let them hear that. This contemporary poem, read by Mary, is a fresh take on that old parable.
The Farmer by W.D. Earhart. Each day I go into the fields to see what is growing and what remains to be done. It is always the same thing. Nothing is growing. Everything needs to be done. Plow, harrow, disc, water, pray, till my bones ache and hands rub blood raw with honest labor. All that grows is the slow, intransigent intensity of need. I have sown my seed on soil guaranteed by poverty to fail. But I don't complain, except to passers-by who ask me why I work such barren earth. They would not understand me if I stooped to lift a rock and hold it like a child, or laughed, or told them it is their poverty I labor to relieve. For them, I complain. A farmer of dreams knows how to pretend. A farmer of dreams knows what it means to be patient. Each day, I go into the fields.
Thank you, Mary. The wisdom of poems, as in parables, is not in who writes them, or the books they're in, or in their rhetorical beauty, But the wisdom of parables and poems like that is that they prove true every day of our actual lives. On that property, we began with 6 sheep and 1 ram. In a couple of years, an exponential number had been produced, fat and healthy, but the flock, the growing flock, began to seem beside the point. Much more deeply fulfilling was seeing those rolling fields go green every autumn when the rains came, even in some soils I thought had no chance of the seed ever finding purchase. And although I knew that a lot of the costly seed had certainly been wasted, and that loss came at a financial and an emotional cost, it seemed rather petty and churlish and cynical to count the cost of the necessary failure to focus on what couldn't succeed when you saw the abundance and the living nourishment of the fraction of seed that had succeeded, having found good minority soil. Why need we be perfectly successful when even God and nature aren't? The history of the evolution of life is a graveyard of failed projects and species. So gratitude at life's abundance overcame and balanced my sense of remorse at my failures and the awareness that I did not need to prevail in everything I did to husband new life. That change in perspective made my heart sing. It still does. As you know, I've been collecting this month things that make you go, issues, personal or otherwise, that get stuck in your craw, that keep you up at night chewing at and you can never seem to get past. And I thought that we might come to terms with some of those living issues in your lives by seeing them through the lens of our Unitarian principles and Unitarian sources of wisdom. One of the most common themes in the many things I've received from you is a subtext of fear that you have failed at life in some way. What if I fail, or what if I have failed, seems to be the common haunting concern. Breaks my heart, of course, as your pastor, but it also strengthens my faith that our free tradition might offer grace to such common afflictions. My Unitarian faith tells me this: not everything that feels good is good for us. And not everything that hurts us is bad for us. Likewise, not all our successes are good for us, and not all of our failures are bad for us. Farming, for me, was about humus, dirt, soil, which shares the same root word with human, reminding us that we too are made of the dust of the earth. Farming was humbling. As Unitarians, we seek spiritual growth, not spiritual perfection. I'm going to say that again. As Unitarians, we seek spiritual growth, not spiritual perfection. Imagine what our whole lives would be like if we were released from the impossible goal of total success in every outcome. What your life would be like if you knew you need not always prevail and be right to have worth and dignity. Imagine being okay with a high degree of failure. Whoever has ears, let them hear that. And you parents out there, find, or you may find, both consolation and inspiration in the work of raising your crop of children, preparing a good soil of heart and mind and character to ready them before they are cast like living seeds into the wider fields of the world. Look, I think if I were to cheapen my own parenthood by calculation, I would be delighted if 25% of all I ever did for them, gave to them, nurtured in them, actually found purchase and bloomed. According to the parable, according to the farmer of dreams, that 25% will be enough to return to the world 100-fold. You can also read the parable of the sower and the seed and the soil as the work of the church in the world. Look, this is a minister saying this. Most of what churches do fails to thrive. Most of what churches do fails to thrive. And the easy cynicism of our times and culture likes to jeer and smirk at church as a failed project. But the 25% of what we offer that does not fail, what a difference those seeds can make to soil that is receptive to it. What a difference our church can make to those who are receptive to it. Would you be sitting here now if ours did not make a difference to you? How can our church cast its seeds of free and loving spirituality out into a world so in need of the nourishment such seeds can provide? And make no mistake, our world, our community here in Adelaide needs liberal religion to sow its seeds out there, especially when there are, yes, many larger, more powerful, better equipped churches with stellar members lavishly casting their seed all over the place through big megaphones, genetically modified seed promising endless prosperity to indulge the world's animal wishful thinking, and to preserve the privilege and power of their few children in a world where most children have and will have neither privilege nor power. Unitarianism can and must cast itself lavishly like seed into the public fields beyond our walls. Some, but certainly not all, and not even most, will take root and return 100-fold for all children and not just our few. Can Unitarians really make any difference at all in so large a field, so full of the rocks and weeds of intractable problems that make one's efforts seem conceited virtue signaling at best, doomed to romantic failure at worst? I tell you, yes, Unitarians can make a difference because Unitarians have made a difference. 200 years ago, slavery was the legal norm, until abolitionists like Unitarian William Wilberforce in the UK worked the soil of the public conscience until the seeds of emancipation finally found purchase. 100 years ago, the political disenfranchisement of women was the legal norm until suffragettes like Unitarian Catherine Helen Spence, right here in Adelaide, worked the soil of the public conscience until the seeds of voter equality finally found purchase. 60 years ago in the United States, racial discrimination was normal and legal until civil rights activists like Unitarian Reverend James Reeb enriched the soil of the public conscience with his own blood so that the seeds of the Civil Rights Amendment could find purchase. Our sixth Unitarian principle, to improve the global community, then, means committing to a perennial, ongoing, steady, patient, failure-ridden husbandry through all the turning seasons, work which is going to be littered with the husks of failure. All the examples I've just given you and more have engaged and enriched the world through our shared Unitarian values. And we see again, by looking at these, how counter to the prevailing culture of success and prosperity our liberal principles are. There is more soil for us to work and more seed for us to cast, and much of what we sow will fail. But the 25% that will thrive, must thrive, can make fertile the fields of the wider world when the season ripens, and we know it can because we know it has. And it would be petty and churlish and cynical to point out everything that failed to thrive along the way, count its cost, and smirkingly call the project failed or dreamy and not worth undertaking. Finally, you can also read the parable and the poem, as many of my ministry peers and colleagues read them, as a metaphor for the work of the minister in and upon the congregation. In nearly 8 years, I have cast a lot of different seed onto a lot of different soils. Even if mine was the best seed in the world, which it is not, 75% of the best must fail to find purchase, must fail to find soil receptive to a relationship with it, and that is just the way it is. That is how nature's economy works. But it was farming taught me that we might measure our success less by our immediate return than by the possibilities we engender. Less by our immediate return than by the possibilities we engender. And so you have to keep offering that seed lavishly, regardless of what most would consider a devastating failure rate. And not to curse the seeds if the soil can't respond, and neither to curse the soil for its condition, but patiently to enrich it. And hardest of all, not to curse ourselves or God or fate for the way nature works with all its prodigal wastage, its low success rate. Not to curse at all, in fact, but to bless instead the more than ample fruitfulness that will come of what we do offer inside and outside these walls. The thing for us as people of faith is to keep offering the best seed we can despite the certainty of routine failure. That is how you and I and we can love the world as God was said to have so loved it, with the sacrifice of that which was dearest to him, an unbounded generosity over arcs of time that span beyond our little lifetimes. By accepting the necessity of failure, the crop of peace, love, and justice we sow as people of faithfulness will find purchase and return to us and to all 100-fold. So may it be. Amen. Let us learn to live in the tension between energizing hope and paralyzing cynicism, for this tension can be creative as well as destructive. And may it fuel our passion to question, our courage to be prophetic, and our faith to live in an invincible hope. Amen. And have a fruitful week. We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.